Welcome back to another episode of the Sterminatus Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
Don's away on assignment. He'll be back next week. And we've got a lot of news from Games Workshop all in the last 40 hours breaking over the weekend. We have a huge tournament out in California, the Hammer Wrath GT, to go over. We have a preview of the Nova Invitational. And as we talked about briefly last episode, ITC was thinking about updating their missions. They have been officially announced on Friday night. So we had plenty of feedback from our own local game group, and the internet has also spoken. So Ray and I will put our thinking caps together and discuss what we found in the new changes. But first, back to the news. Ray, tell us about the new codex announced by Games Workshop.
Well, starting off with the first thing he announced is a new box set. This is called Tooth and Claw. It features a Gene Stealer cult force against an all Primaris Space Wolves force. It has some of the basic stuff that you expect. One bit of which being Primaris, the Intercessors, a squad of five of those, a squad of aggressors, and then a Redemptor Dreadnought, and then leading them is a Primaris, I believe they call it a Battle Leader. Yeah, Primaris Battle Leader, which I'm going to be, I'm not too familiar with Space Wolves, so I think that's something similar to a Lieutenant.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're keeping that because they kind of mix and match their heroes as kind of being kind of all-purpose. But the key is that's a unique model to that kit and to that box set. So that's your first unique new Space Wolf model.
Yeah. And then on the other side, of course, the Gene Stealer cult. We are finally getting Aberrance as a multi-part kit. Up to now, the only way you could get that was through the old Deathwatch Overkill box. We get a new model in the Abominant, which, as of right now, there's no way to know if it's a type like a sergeant for a squad of Aberrants, or if it's just a lone model.
My guess would be it's an HQ choice. The way they described it, it's basically the non-Psyker version of a Magus. You know, it's supposed to be a close combat version, but that's strictly hunch. I have no proof of that.
We get the Acolyte Icon Ward, which is for sure an HQ choice. A squad or a set of hybrid metamorphs, which you can also make as the Acolyte hybrids, and then a set of Gene Stealers to round out that side. They also announced the Space Wolves Codex. And then if anybody actually sat there and carefully read the article, they announced a few things to go with this codex. One of the more expected at this point changes is the inclusion of Wolfguard Terminators in Cataphracti and Tartaros pattern Terminator armor. But one thing that really stuck out, at least to me, is they would have a data sheet for, as they put it, Wolfen Dreadnoughts.
I can't imagine what that's going to be like. I mean, Wolfen already a close combat monster. Now, oh, let's take the near-dead ones and put them in a big steel can. Ah!
So the first thing that came to mind when I read that is Murderfang. So I don't know if they're going to keep Murderfang and include these as just kind of a points. I don't know if it's just a points change thing where they're worth more and they get more attacks. Maybe there's not going to be Murderfang anymore and you're just going to be able to use that particular head for them, or both, whether there's going to be Murderfang and you can just kind of use that those bits. And then be able to switch out the arms and have it just be a Wolfen Dreadnought.
It's a good idea. It might be.
And then, of course, along with that, they announced the basic special edition codex with a different cover, the cards, and then the dice, a set of dice. Another thing they announced, this is a more just what they're bringing out is, it looked like a squad of Plague Marines. I don't know if they're, if they look, kind of looks like it's those three special Plague Marines that they had out for a limited time.
Yeah, that caught me by surprise too, because I thought, weren't these already out? So I think you're right. I think they're the ones that are maybe just available in the box set or something like that. I don't. They look cool, but I don't think there's any new rules that go with them. I think they're just, you know, Plague Marines.
Mm-hmm. And all of this is slated to go up for pre-order on Saturday. So it looks like the, as they like to put it, the Summer of Sigmar has come to an end.
So first of all, it's exciting to finally get some new models for 40K. I think it's great for Space Wolves. Space Wolves is sort of the, you know, Grey Knights were sort of the kings of 5th edition, but Space Wolves were right behind them with Grey Hunter squads and their scouts that remember the nasty ability to come in off the back table edge that used to drive players nuts, and Long Fangs were a thing. So it's just another army, a lot like Imperial Knights. A lot of people have these kind of locked up somewhere, and all they need to do is dust them off, and they can be a major threat. A lot of Thunderwolf Cav is still out there. So I'll be curious to see what this codex brings to the meta. I think also this is exciting that if they're announcing this now, that means what are they going to announce at their seminar at Nova Open in 3 weeks. So get some of the old stuff out of the way, and all of a sudden we may have some real brand new announcements.
I'm excited to see what they announce.
Did you have a chance to see that video with Phil Kelly going over the background of the box set, you know, kind of the lore, what's going on?
I did. It's nothing too special. They kind of just explain the setting of it. It almost sounds like they might be doing campaign off of it after the this gets released, because they mentioned that the world itself that the fights that or the box is supposed to take place on is kind of like one of the few transversible pathways from the Imperium, and as they call it, the Dark Imperium, which is on the other side of the Warp Rift.
You're right. And one of the things that was sort of kind of a throwaway line in that fiction was that an Orc Wa had attempted to besiege the city, and they have these massive void shields that protected him. And so the Orcs got bored smashing against the shield and decided to take up some sort of racing competition in the faraway fields. Well, later today, there was a leak from a Japanese manufacturer or distributor, I should say. And they showed up a new box game called Speed Freaks. And it's basically looks like Gorka Morka repackaged. I couldn't tell you much else because I don't speak Japanese, and had all the little characters on it. But the main title was Speed Freaks, you know, combat racing in the 41st millennium, and had your typical orc vehicles, had the updated orc vehicles, not the old Gorka Morka vehicles on the cover. And so maybe that's what's coming out. So another box set and another way to tie in the Orc Codex, which should be out pretty soon. Who knows? But so yeah, lots of new stuff seems to be bubbling to the top. So sounds like between the campaign pack and the announce of one of the actual announce of one of the first three codices that's remaining, pretty exciting stuff. So I look forward to seeing some more of that in the future. All right. On that note, after the break, we will go over our main tournament of the weekend, as well as like a quick preview of the Nova Open Invitational, which was the new pairings were just announced.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
We're back after the break, and as we were perusing the Fine West Coast Pairings app, we noticed that we overlooked a GT that emerged over the weekend down in Marietta, Georgia. The Warzone Gigabytes, which I've heard a lot of good things about that store. So they had their own GT down there as well, part of the Great Southeast meta down there. So starting with your top eight, we had Daniel Hesters with Death Guard. In seventh place, Colin Watts with Thousand Suns. Sixth place with Astra Militarum, John McCann. Black Legion, led by Christopher Gropp, came in fifth place. In fourth place, Mark Stein with Thousand Suns. In third place, Alex Putt with Drukhari. In second place, Mark Perry. I wonder if that's the sculptor, Mark Perry. That'd be really cool. Anyway, Mark Perry with Thousand Suns came in second. And this year's Warzone Gigabytes winner is Stephen Mitchell with Alpha Legion. So congratulations to all our winners at that particular event. As we mentioned, the other big event over the weekend was the Hammer of Wrath GT. And lots of familiar names attending that. But interesting, I posted on our Facebook earlier on Saturday, end of day one had some very interesting members in the top eight, including a Harlequin player at number one and a second Harlequin player in the top eight. Reese Robbins making an appearance actually at the tournament table. So I thought that was interesting, as well as Frankie G and Papa. And he was actually playing, Tyranids. I was surprised, not his usual Drukhari or Sisters of Battle. And it also was shaping up to be the Battle of the Podcast, as you had Jay Jones and Andrew Dickinger of Roll of the Seas versus Reese and Frankie from Signals of the Frontline. So how did it all turn out? Well, let's go over that top eight. So in eighth place, emerging from the desk and actually to the game table, Reese Robbins with Khorne Demons. Yeah, I couldn't believe he took Demons either. I was expecting his Catagens. Seventh place, Matthew Ledesma with Imperial Knights. Sixth place, Jason McKenzie with Cult Mechanicus. In fifth place, one of our local guys, Derek Page with Imperial Knights. Fourth place, Jordan Stein with Aletak. In third place, Andrew Dickinger with Deathwatch. We'll talk about that list. It's not quite what you see, what it seems. In second place, we have Richard Cozart with Chaos Demons. And this year's 2018 Hammer of Wrath champion is Jeff Poole with Aletak. So interesting event. Ray, you pointed this out. Nobody went undefeated.
Yeah. At best, there were two people who had four wins and a tie.
As a matter of fact, Richard and Jeff fought each other in the last round and tied at 27 points each. So looking at, so Jeff ended up pulling it out by a mere 7 points based off of his previous performance. In Jeff's list, let's take a quick look at that. He took a Latok Battalion, complete with Autarch on us with Starglaive, Reaper Launcher, Force Shield, Banshee Mask, and Plasma Grenades. And just give me 1 second. He also took a Farseer with no particular upgrades, with the exception of Falshu's Wings. And the troop slot, he took 3 units of 5 Avengers, all with Exarchs. And heavy support slot. Almost had something bad there. Heavy support slot. 3 units of Dark Reapers. 3-man units with Exarch and Tempest Launchers. No surprises there. He also took 3 Wave Serpents to keep them all safe. Second battalion, also a Latok. He took Iliac Nightspear, a Warlock Conclave, and 3 units of 5 Rangers. He rounded out the detachment with an Aletok air wing of 3 Crimson Hunters with bright lances and pulse lasers. So it's funny. It's the same ingredients we see time over time, but usually you see some little sprinkling of Inari, maybe a random Drukhari black heart detachment in there. None of that. He kept it pretty much true to form, Aletok all the way through.
Kind of surprising.
A little surprising, but 14 command points. Quick look here. I'm sure he can fit. Yeah, the way he's got things fitted out. 3, 8. He could get probably as low as, 10 or 12 drops. So pretty competitive when it comes to going first. Doesn't really need to go first with the kind of protection he's got. Pretty solid list. We've talked about the elements about that in the past. It just Never seen them put together like that before. So congratulations, Jeff Pohl. Skim down to Richard Cozart for a second. He came in second with Chaos Demons. And Richard's list is in a god-awful font. It's very difficult to read, but we'll do our best. He starts with off a battalion of, looks like, Khorne Demons as his main faction. He's got a Demon Prince with the Skull Reaver. Those of you who don't know, that's the axe that kills knights. He also took Skull Taker and a Bloodbaster in his troop slots. In his HQ slots, he's got three units. This is interesting. Three units of 20 Bloodletters. He did not take the Bloodletter Bomb. Interesting. Second Battalion, this is being Nurgle. I took up two Boxbringers, three units of three Nurglings, three Foul Blight Spawns, and two Plague Burst Crawlers. Did not specify what weapons he took on that. And he rounds it up with Thousand Sons, also in a battalion. Took Araban Exalted Sorcerer with Helm of the Third Eye. And that was actually his Warlord, and he also took three units of 10 Cultists. So other than not taking the Bloodletter Bomb overall, kind of an interesting list. So that was Richard's list, like an interesting smattering of all things. Interesting, still not seeing a lot of Slaanesh out there in the tournament scene. So hopefully someday they'll be back to some sort of prominence. In third place, Andrew Dickinger, part of the podcast battle that we talked about a little bit. He, as I mentioned, he brought Death Watch, but it's not what it seems. And he actually talked about this on their own podcast. Check it out if you can, the Roll to Seize podcast. It's quite hilarious. He starts with a Death Watch battalion, so that much is true. He's got a captain with a Stalker Bolt gun and made him the Warlord with Lord of Hidden Knowledge. Took a second captain with Jump Pack and a Mastercrafted Bolt gun. And he also took three units of 10 Primaris veterans with bolt rifles and two Inceptors with assault bolters. And if I correct me if I'm wrong, that mixed unit allows him to fall back and still shoot, similar to if they had the fly keyword. The second battalion is a Blood Angels battalion. He's got two captains with jump packs, each with Thunderhammer and Storm Shield. One has Angel's Wings, one has Viritas Vitae. And three unit of five scouts. Included in those pistols, close combat weapon, and heavy bolter. And last but not least, he rounds it out with a House Tyrannus Super Heavy. A Knight Gallant with Fist, Chain Sword, Heavy Stupper, Iron Storm, Missile Pod, and gave him a Warlord trait. And he's got two Armiger Helverins with auto cannons and heavy stubbers.
Just enough for three more command points too.
That's all he needed. So got a nice mix of the heavy hitting, but the Death Watch are just such a Swiss Army knife when it comes to having that much shooting and then get to choose your ammunition to the mix and match to what you need. Really cool list. He's talked about that list before on his podcast. Yeah, I'm giving props to this guy because he's a local guy, but I also want to give a little attention to his list as well. Derek Page running Imperial Knights, and a really interesting list he's got here. And it's the elements, the thought process is still the same. It's a lot of big robots with a whole bunch of Imperial Guard to give them a bunch of command points. Just does it in a slightly different way. And actually changed it up for this particular tournament, so now he's making me a liar. But anyway, we'll talk about it. Kadian Battalion, so he starts right off the bat with five command points there. He's got the company commander with Kukros Aquila. He's got another company commander, and then an infantry squad with a mortar team, a 10-man infantry squad, and an Earthshaker carriage battery. That's the new thing he added. And then in his super heavy detachment, he has... Knight Warden with Iron Storm, Missile Pod, Reaper Chainsword, Endless Fear, and Master of the Trial. Another Imperial Knight Warden with similar loadout, Iron Storm, Missile Pod, Armor of the Sainted Ion, Thunderstrike, I guess that's the Gauntlet, Avenger Gatling Gun, and Knight Seneschal. And this is the Piece de Restance of his army. Knight Profirion, that's also his Warlord. He comes with two Magma Las cannons, two auto cannons, and an Iron Storm missile pod. So he still comes out with 14 command points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 drops. So he's probably going first a lot. So a bit of a departure from his Renegades list where he had Renegade Guard and he threw in a Heretic Thunder... not Thunderhawk. What's that thing called? Storm...
Which one is it? The Forge World Transport?
Not the Transport, the shooty one with all the Avenger bolt cannons on it.
Space Marines?
It's going to drive me nuts. Yeah, there's a Chaos Fire version Raptor. Of it now. Fire Raptor, that's the one. Just absolutely gut-wrenchingly nasty. So a quick rundown, some notables. Paul Bowman was the aforementioned Harlequin player that was in the top eight after day one. He's still doing respectable with the Harlequin list going 4-1. So quick look, his list is more of your typical out there. He's got the Shadow Seer, Solitaire, large units of Skyweavers with Haywire cannons, backed it up by... a Cabal of the Black Heart featuring triple Ravagers. And then, of course, the bare minimum, you can get an Elatok Battalion so you can squeeze in a Farseer and a Warlock and some Shining Spears. Further down, we'll talk about some other famous names that did not make it. So we mentioned Jay Jones was in first place after day one. He ended up losing both his games on day two and fell down to 13th place. Alan DeHeza of Rage Quit Table Flip, one of the top Chaos players from last season, got off to a rough start, lost his first two games, but then ran the table, scoring 30 points or more in each of his last three games. Aaron Hayden with Death Guard came a respectable 18th place, tied with Trender Sandoval, another veteran of the West Coast tournament circuit, working his way up there. Interesting enough, let's get a little further down. Get some more popular names here. Brandon Grant going 3-2. Two rough outings. He went 3-2 at BAO, unable to defend his title, and 3-2 again at the Hammer of Wrath GT. John Wehrmuller, he was the other guy who went undefeated at BAO, was unable to catch Don for first place, but had a rough outing with his Knights the second time around. Only 2-3 this particular weekend, but he was in good company because right in 30th place, because we're in 31st place, was Frankie Giampapa of Frontline Gaming fame, also going 2-3 with High Fleet Kraken. So interesting. A couple other notables, Pablo Martinez of Chapter Tactics fame, won his first game and went downhill from there with his Blood Angels list. And another one you and I were talking about a little bit before the show here, Ray, Jessica Bowman was still your number three Necron player, but two tournaments in a row on the wrong side of the win-loss column when it comes to win-loss. She actually went 1-3. Excuse me. She did not play the fifth round. So I'd be curious. You know, we haven't heard Necrons in a while make it to the top. Is it something missing? Is it just somebody hasn't figured out the winning formula? What's wrong with Necrons?
Oddly, I think the problem with them is I think they're going in their people are taking going in the wrong direction. I hear a lot of talk of you should do Tesla, like on Immortals, you should do Tesla. And lately I've really come around to the idea of using Gauze more, especially since, you know, yeah, the weapons don't do the automatic pen anymore, but something like a Gauze blaster, it's got -2 AP. So something, especially when you're going up against knights, it's the same strength. But instead of that 1 out of 6 chance of you getting a couple extra shots, you're changing it where they're rolling a 5+ for each shot you hit with. And knights are really dominating right now. I mean, a lot of people who can ally them are allying them. So if you're a Necron player who decides to use as much Tesla as possible, and you find yourself across the table from a Night Army, those Tesla weapons aren't going to do the same as a Gauss weapon.
Yeah, they have a lot of tools, but it's definitely a major shift. I think that the wisdom that you described there, the higher Tesla weapons, and was great when we had more of an infantry meta. You know, now that we have more of a mechanized meta, you need to kind of shift around. And that, for some armies, it's a matter of switching out war gear, maybe switching a few units here and there. For Necrons, you're probably looking at a wholesale change in your whole army makeup, you know, whether it be Immortals, or do you go with more warriors and take advantage of that? I've seen a lot more destroyer spam lately. I still think there's some other options out there that can do really well. The biggest one I'm struggling with, well, I was just kind of mucking around with my old lists. There once was a time 3 monoliths in a list was a no-brainer. It's hard to squeeze in 2 monoliths into a list these days.
Personally, I haven't felt the need to put a monolith in the list. I don't see movement as being a huge problem, but I think that might have a little bit to do with the kind of choices I've made on my Necron list. I have a lot of things that people wouldn't realize for Necrons move fairly quickly. That would be Destroyers and Trier Praetorians. You know, I chose units that I knew would make him fast without me having to spend a lot of points on a monolith just to put things a little bit further ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The reason why I was taking the monoliths in the past was two things. One was I felt going to more and more tournaments that didn't have enough terrain. At least if they don't have line of sight blocking terrain, I'm going to bring my own in the form of the monolith. It has almost the same silhouette as a bastion. Number two, especially with knights, I can fall back over infantry. It says, well, good luck moving over my monoliths. So if I had 2 of them, I could block them out a little bit better around some of the terrain and keep them at bay a little bit. But in the event of a Tesseract Vault these days, those are a little stronger, a little bigger. But again, they have Tesla, but they got, I think it's 20 shots altogether is what we talked about last time. Plus all the Satan inside.
I see the Tesseract Vaults as being better because they've got that they've got the Invuln save. They've got the Satan powers. They're just between the vault, the obelisk, and the monolith. I just see the vault as being the way to go.
All right. Other tournament coming up. We mentioned the Nova Open. It's be Labor Day weekend, so about 3 weeks away. And one of the key events that they bring on, in addition to the large GT, as well as the great appearances by Games Workshop doing a seminar and all the great hobby seminars, is the Nova Invitational, which is a invite-only tournament. And it's kind of a little fun. It's kind of like the March Madness, where they have a bracketing. It's a one loss and you're out, winner take all type affair. And they're actually seeded. So they actually have had number 1, number 2 seeds all the way down to 32. So a 32 person tournament, invite only, and the brackets are up. And some interesting takes on this. First thing Don mentioned and wanted to share with the group was everybody pretty much took the same army.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it now. I'm only seeing 32, or not 32, 16, it's 32 people. Almost half of them are playing what looks to be, well, there's only the symbols here. AM, Astra Militarum, BA is probably Blood Angels, and IK, which would be Imperial Knight. In fact, the first matchup is Andrew Gagneau and Eric Truck, and they're both bringing the exact same army list makeup. Well, I don't know that the list is the same, but the description of what factions they are the same. In the second matchup, Mike Walsh and Warner Bourne. In this case, it's a little bit of difference. Instead of the Knights, Warner seems to have Ad Mech. But then you go back down, Tony Kopax playing it, Ed Miller. I think almost half of the people are bringing this list or this makeup.
Pretty close.
There's a few that are a Chaos version.
Yeah, it's not a lot of wiggle room there.
Oh, wait, no, that's 1,000 Sons. The people put 1,000 Sons on here really weird. It's 1KS, so if you're not looking at it closely and if it looks like IKS.
Anyway, so you can download the bracket on the Nova Open webpage, but just a quick rundown of who's what and where. So your number one seed, as Ray mentioned, Andrew Gagne versus Eric Truk. Then right below that is the 16th seed versus the 17th seed, Mike Walsh versus Werner Born. If you recognize Werner's name, he was the coach of the American ETC team that just won the championship. Next bracket, 8th seed, also part of the American ETC team, Tony Kopak, and also a 2-time Nova Open winner against Trevor Harris. And the next one, 9th seed, TJ Lanigan, who's been in and out of the ITC top 10 all season long against Ed Miller. Another ETC member, Nick Rose, is your 4th seed, going against Philip Hall. Two players who've been in and out of the ITC top 10. Jared Friedman is your 13th seed versus Bruce Merker on the 20th seed. One of the bright spots from last BAO as well as the LVO, Carlos Kaiser, goes up against Alan Blankenborough at the 28th seed. This one's a bit of a shock to me. Todd Silber is your 12th seed. He has always been a diehard Eldar player. So when I saw he was playing Tau Empire, I was like, what? That has to be a misprint. But he's going against the 21st seed, Jack Harpster. Number 2 seed, and I believe he's won at least once, maybe twice. Nick Dadavati is your number 2 seed against Evan Slagle. Now, Nick is actually bringing Eldar this time around, not his usual Chaos army. 15th seed, Casey Haley, who is bringing Death Guard, Thousand Sons, DOC, quick.
Demons of Chaos.
Demons of Chaos. Yes, supposed to be Imperial Demons, yes. I don't know why they call it that. But anyway, Casey Haley's going to get Dallas Rappaport. It was interesting, got a NIDS Gene Stealer Cult Army. That's going to be a fun game to watch. And this one I feel really bad about. I saw this matchup, and I was like, that can't be right. But Matt Shookman, who's your 7th seed, he's arguably one of the top 3 Eldar players in the country, going back up against Adam Abramowitz, who's mostly known for his hobby. I can't remember, he used to be on the Forge the Narrative podcast as sort of one of their resident painters. So good luck, Adam.
there I look at one.
Next after that, Reese Robbins, 10th seed against Stephen Four, others known as Juice from the Long War podcast. That one could be a really interesting matchup. You got two guys who a lot of tournament experience, but don't quite have that big win under their belts just quite yet. So that'd be also really neat to watch as well. Reese is bringing Deptus Astartes, which I'm trying to think, is he flirting with his Raven Guard again? And Juice is bringing the usual Astra Militarum, Blood Angel, Imperial Knight mixture.
Astra Militarum and Imperial Knights. So no Blood Angels involved in this list.
Nice to see Mr. Sportsmanship as the 3rd seed.
And he's playing Carl Vela, which is going with Chaos Space Marines, Demons of Chaos, and Thousand Sons.
Next bracket, Brad Nichols, also going up to number 19, Benjamin Cheerwine, who's playing Craftworld Eldar. 6th seed, Brandon Grant against Patrick McEnany. And rounding out your brackets, Justin Curtis versus Sam Lucidi, who's playing Death Guard. So it'd be fun to print out your brackets, find out who wins. Look forward to seeing how this all shakes out. Some interesting names in the list in terms of and some interesting matchups. So we'll see how that wraps up. Usually the Invitational is first, where the finals, the invitational, is usually the morning that starts the actual GT. So you usually see the invitational results first and then the GT afterward. But they may have mixed it up this year, so we'll see how that all plays out. All right, after the break, Ray and I dissect the new ITC missions that are official as we speak. See you after the break. And we're back, and we're here with the new ITC missions. There's been a update to the missions. One of the primary missions has been changed, and most of the secondaries have seen some sort of edit or adjustment. Thank you. I was going to say reduction. That wasn't quite right. So first thing right off the bat, what I find quite handy as a TO, the score sheet has been changed. There's not nearly as much black ink on it this way around, so it's a little cheaper to print out. So I'm very excited to see that. As well as they've included a 8.5x11 display of all six deployment zones, which is really handy because that was something that was always in use. Flip to the book, you roll, I got a 4. Which one was deployment 4? So they're all right there, easy to figure out. So as expected, as we talked about last week, mission 4, which was the two objective mission, has been completely dismantled and replaced with an interesting mission. One of the most popular ones was the precious cargo, where there were, I believe it was 4 objectives, maybe 5. But the key is that one objective in each player is allowed to move them. And as long as there's sort of restrictions on where you can move those objectives, where the other objectives are fixed. So this new mission 4 is very interesting. It is 5 objectives. The center objective is not movable, but the other 4 objectives are. So each player gets to place 2 objectives following the usual objective placement rules. Pretty exciting. I like the idea of mixing and matching some, because I was always had an issue with people saying, well, we like fixed objectives because that way good players don't game the system. I'm like, well, good players get good because they know where to put their objectives. Why would you penalize them for that? So I like the mix and match of fixed versus and movable objectives within a tournament.
I would agree with that, yeah. It makes in some ways it'll make it easier too. I've seen people spend, you know, maybe 10 minutes just making sure that they've got the objectives put in the right spot when you've got more than a couple, like 2 or 3. They'll really spend their time making sure that they put it in an exact spot. So being able to put it wherever you like can save time.
I agree. The fixed ones were also helpful too, but I think some people, like I said, some people just spent way too much time measuring, you know, things. I was like, oh, I really want to find a way to mark them onto them on the board ahead of time to speed up at our events, but the idea of painting my fat mat was not a good idea. So didn't quite happen that way. So those are also keeping track at home. They also flip-flop mission 5 and mission 6, so you didn't have 2 5 objective missions back in a row. I think most TOs kind of picked the 5 of the 6 missions they liked the best. And so a minor change there. But the meat and potatoes of the changes comes in the secondary missions. Ray, do you want to talk about those a little bit? What's changed?
So one of the first things they point out is that there is now an asterisk next at the beginning of the secondary, or some of the secondaries. Those ones, you cannot have them stack on each other. So if you kill enemy and you have Kingslayer and Headhunter as secondaries, you cannot get points for both from one kill. I'll start by saying that. Headhunter, it did stay the same. It's still 1 point for each enemy character that's destroyed. Kingslayer, stay the same.
Well, hang on, before you...
Go ahead.
Yeah, but there's a big change there, which is kind of hidden. I see a lot of folks on the internet kind of say, oh, they haven't changed, big deal. There is a big change, because those are all asterisks, as you mentioned, so they don't stack.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, but I think a lot just want to re-emphasize that point, because you make a really big point, really good point with that, is a lot of people kind of look at each of these secondaries in a vacuum by themselves, and the key that they don't stack with each other, like you mentioned, makes a big difference. You know, in the old days, If I killed your warlord who I had Kingslayer on, that I'm also getting Headhunter on top of that. So certain warlords, specifically Celestine with the two little cherubs next to her, was worth, you know, a truckload of points. Now you got to pick and choose. So if you put Kingslayer on one monster, one character, you still need to kill four other characters to get this point now. So it's a big change in terms of where you're looking at. And this be the same thing with head. A couple of the other ones coming up, I don't want to spoil it, but just although the individuals haven't changed, the fact that they don't interact with each other is a pretty big change.
Kingslayer also stayed the same. In fact, they mentioned that it was voted the fourth most popular secondary. March for Death. The way I understand it, this one is brand new. It is choose four of your opponent's units with a power level of 7 or higher. You earn 1 point for each of these units destroyed. This has the asterisk, so it does not stack with others. They did point one of the things that's kind of important. They did point out that as of right now, the 7+ is just for now. Things might change there.
And I think it will, but I have to kind of play it out, because the first thing I did when I saw this is, what famous units that we see a lot of are power level 7, and which ones are just below? And I found several that are power level 6. Space Marine Aggressors, you see those a lot, especially in Dark Angels lists. There was several named characters. They kind of float between 6 and 8, so some characters would be above it, some people would be below it. Not sure which direction they're going to go. I don't want to say, hey, lower it to 6, because this will capture all these extra units that kind of slid by, because I don't know how that all plays out, you know, in terms of the big scheme of things. But this is not unprecedented. The guys at the Renegade GT have something similar to this in one of their mission packs. But the mixing and matching of picking units that need to be killed with the power level is adds an extra element of, is this the right secondary for me? And choosing the right units to kill, I think, will be also very interesting.
The next one, also with an asterisk, Big Game Hunter. One point for every enemy model with the monster or vehicle keyword, and 7 or more wounds destroyed. So, this used to be 10 or more wounds. Problem is, there were a lot of decently sized models that were able to just get under that. Couple good examples: Carnifexes, Dreadnoughts, Talos Pain Engines, and another good one is Annihilation Barges. I seem to remember a game against you, and you had a Big Game Hunter, only to realize that you couldn't get any points because my Annihilation Barges didn't have enough wounds.
Yeah, that caught me by surprise. But you're absolutely right. The Talos, I was like, oh, okay, but I've also played against enough Tyranid players with Distraction Carnifexes, and like, wow, I don't get any points for those. Yeah. That stinks. So that's pretty neat. I'm a little hesitant about the Dreadnoughts. They're not used that much to begin with, so now they give up points. So are they going to be pushed further to the back shelf? Don't know. You know, it's, I still think the day of the Dreadnought is still upon us. It's still coming. But a little concerned about that. Interesting vehicles that did not make the cut are some of your smaller stuff. For Jakari players, you know, Venoms are below that cut with only 6 wounds. And I had to double check. I haven't had a chance to double check because if the Tarox has 6 wounds, I think it does for Astra Militarum.
I don't remember. I thought that one might have had 10, but all right. Next one. We got Titan Slayers. This one hasn't changed. It does have the asterisk, though, now. Next one, the Reaper. This one doesn't have the asterisk at all, so...
Hang on, let's go back to Titan Slayer. So although, again, another one of those didn't change. For every 8 wounds, you inflict on a model with a Titanic keyword, and that's mixed and matched. So if you take 8 wounds off of one model and another 8 wounds off another model, you get 2 points. But the key thing is, if you were playing Imperial Knights, you usually lined up Titan Slayer, Big Game Hunter, because a knight is also a vehicle with 10 or more wounds. So now that they're asterisked, you do not get... you cannot compare them. So what happens is you'd have to choose, as you're knocking points off that knight, off wounds off that particular knight, where am I allocating my points? To the Titan Slayer or to Big Game Hunter? You can't do both at the same time. So it may be in your best interest to actually skip Big Game Hunter. You can easily get almost all, you know, if they have more than one knight, there's 28 wounds on a knight, you're going to get at least 3 points from Titan Slayer. So you can probably mix and match, but it also helps. So those knights aren't just, you know, kill one knight and you just max out your secondaries on, you know, that first kill. So it's kind of nice to see that.
I think another thing you're not considering is the fact that you, for one knight, you can still get 2 points off of Titan Slayer. And then after that, hold off and then just get that point for Big Game Hunter.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, you're not required to say, okay, I'm only going to get Titan Slayer off of this knight. Because Titan Slayer works off of just 8 wounds lost. It doesn't have to be 8 wounds off of a specific model each time.
Actually, no, you mentioned that. That's pretty smart. You could probably get, because it's 28 wounds. So the first 24 wounds, so the 3 groups of 8, I'll take 3 points on Titan Slayer. And then the last 4 wounds, I'll take that to take my kill on Big Game Hunter. And then do that to the second knight. And then my last 2 points for Big Game Hunter, probably take out some halverins or some other stuff that they have lying around. That would be pretty smart to do that.
But again, this outside of the fact that it doesn't stack, that Titan Slayer has not changed. The Reaper, this was probably one of the least popular. That's certainly how it was voted for, according to the Frontline Gaming guys. It has now changed. Now, for every 20 enemy models destroyed, you earn a point. They did this specifically because people were making it a point of only having a very specific number of guys in units. So to try to avoid people being able to get the points for the Reaper, I think this will fix it where people won't necessarily do that way anymore, but you're definitely going to have to pay more attention if you're doing points for the Reaper, because you're going to have to be sitting there and counting, making sure when you hit 20.
Yeah, interesting. This one does not have the asterisks. So 20 models, that includes your enemy characters, even if you got points for them on Headhunter. So these do stack. I was kind of on the fence on this one. I like the simplicity of it, but to me it felt like, okay, you're saying I can max out if I kill 80 models. And I hear a lot of people on the internet saying, well, I play Orcs or I play Tyranids. I have 250 models on the board. And part of me is like, well, that's kind of the gestalt of your army. I was going to take Reaper, whether it be the old version or the new version, because you have so many models. For me not to do that would be kind of silly. So I'm not going to not kill your army. You're kind of in the way with that big a footprint. But I think I would have liked a sliding scale for, like, you know, like you get 1 point at 20, 2 points at 50, 3 points at 120. You know, it's kind of each point gets up progressively harder to get to that max 4 points rather than a flat 20. But I get it. 20 models is a lot easier to figure out.
One thing it's going to be that could be interesting, I hope they address it, is when you have certain models such as Necron Warriors, if you've got a squad of 10, and over the course of the game you do reanimation protocols 10 times or even 20 times, does that mean that you've given up a point for the Reaper or no?
It doesn't specifically say it, so the rules as a raw, people are going to be all over me for saying this, but the precedent above was on the character on Kingslayer. It says, for instance, when a character may regenerate wounds or resurrect during the course of a game, total wounds lost or over the course of the game are counted towards this mission. I know it doesn't specifically say that on Reaper, but I would assume that was the intent. So yeah, if if you get pretty fortunate on those reanimation protocols, you could be giving up more points.
But if that's the case, you're gonna have to pay a lot of attention, because it's not just gonna be what's not on the board, because things are gonna be jumping on and off the board in the case of Necrons.
Same thing with Alpha Legion cultists. Hey, I just knocked down 17 cultists. Nope, they're going to regenerate and be in your backfield now. You know, I believe that Chakari has something similar, and then I think there's something similar with Admech, but no one usually takes it. There's a way you can regenerate I forgot what they're called, the tank tread guys that. Oh, I can't think. Yeah, I can't remember what they're called anymore.
I know who you're talking about. I just can't think of their name either.
Oh, some sort of servitor thing. Anyway, moving on. Recon.
This one has not changed. No, at the end of the player turn, if you've got one in each unit, at least partially in each table quarter, you still get 1 point.
Very popular, as I mentioned. I didn't realize it was the second most popular, but no changes there. So continue to move on.
Behind enemy lines, they changed this one around a little bit to make it easier to counter. This one is scored at the beginning of your turn. You have to have at least one unit wholly in the enemy deployment zone. So that means each model's base has to be completely in.
Yeah, kind of old school.
At the beginning of so this is something you're going to score before you move anything.
Yeah, it's kind of like I was mentioning old school, the old ITC missions from prior to 8th. Remember, that's how they used to score everything. It's where you were at the start of your turn. They had something similar to this. They had it behind enemy lines, as well as when you scored your objectives was always at the start of your turn, which was a big change to the current mission set. Interesting throwback. So, I don't know. I got to play with that one a little bit. I know I struggled a lot with behind enemy lines in the past because I felt like I was just sacrificing those units to get some quick secondary points. So the fact that I need to put one unit forward, and maybe it's really like an assault unit that's going to harass in the backfield, that might be the right way to go with this, but I don't have to play around with this one.
It could be good, but we'll have to see. I do like that it has to be done at the beginning. So your opponent in theory has a whole turn to try to change you from getting that point. The next one, the Butcher's Bill. This replaces Death by a Thousand Cuts. They explained that Death by a Thousand Cuts was not a popular one at all. So this is destroy 2+ enemy units during a player turn. Turn 1 point. This will definitely be nice when you're playing against someone who uses MSU style lists. Someone who has who spams out large units, not going to be a good choice there, unless you feel like you can take them out.
I don't like this one. I actually liked. I guess I was very unpopular because I liked Death by a Thousand Cuts. I knew it was risky, but it reminded me again. It was a throwback to the old ITC missions where you had if you rolled triples, you could choose. You could do the. Instead of taking two objectives, you could get either the triple play, either hold three objectives or kill three units to get the extra points. I agree. It was always hard to pull off, especially then once as they start listing feedback, I didn't pick up on it that if you got a point for every three you killed. So if you killed six units in a single turn, you got 2 points that turn. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So against MSU, because one thing it's everybody focused on the MSU units, but where I think that's why I don't like Butcher's Bill that much is destroying two enemy units. You can kill a unit and then maybe the straggling character behind them, especially if an assault base army. That's not terribly difficult to do, but I guess it is harder to do 4 times out of 6 turns. I don't know.
It is important to note that this does not have the asterisk. So you can stack with this.
That's an interesting point, because not only you're taking, because then you could stack that with Reaper, you could stack that with Kingslayer, you could stack that with Headhunter. Yeah, all right. I'm getting on board with it. All right.
And the next one is Ground Control. Earn 1 point for each objective held at the end of the last battle round played. So they say this one's backed by popular demand. I personally haven't heard any what kind of demand this has gotten.
Yeah.
I would definitely suggest that anybody who looks at a lot of this listen to the episode of the signals from the front line that they released out in on YouTube and the podcast app last week. They definitely they crunch out the numbers and the percentages of some of this stuff. It might help you understand why they did what they did.
This is the one that I kind of, again, it's another throwback. And for those who long for the book missions, and this is the one where I kind of go, this little inching in the back of my brain going, this is the one I may change my list to try and go for. You know, simple, you know, a lot of times when we think about reserve units, it's always about that either beta strike, you're going to come in turn two and just smash your opponent's face in. Or maybe I'm going to use things, you know, you're not going to be able to smash my face in on turn one because I'm coming in on turn two to keep some key units off. This might be the one where I keep a couple small units with high mobility off the board to the turn three and kind of scoot around a little bit to hold objectives so I can collect this at the end. The biggest complaint I've seen so far on the internet is, what makes you think I've got four units at the end of the game to hold four objectives? But part of me is like, we did it in the old edition. You can do it in this edition.
Also, I think it's important to remember that not all missions have four objectives.
True. A lot of them do. Now, I believe at least four of the six. But I think you bring up a good point. If four objectives is going to be hard, because if there's only four objectives on the table, you have to hold every objective. Yeah, you could bring up a good point there.
Yeah, not only do you have to get your squad to the objective, they also have to hold the objective, not just contest it. Which means one of two things. At the very least, you have to have more guys on the objective. Outside of that, you also have to worry about whether or not you needed that to be objective secured.
You know, that's a good counter to Reaper then. Because those are the armies that you would typically, because let's go back to those armies, orcs, tyranids, large blocks of troops. You know, I'm standing on these things at the end. I'm immune to morale. You're going to have to pluck off every model. And not only do you have to kill at least 80 models, if you don't, I'm going to make up for it with this mission. Because I can easily hold three or four objectives at the end of the game. And that's going to be hard to do if you've brought all the firepower with low number shots, high damage to take out knights.
All right. The last secondary. Old school. Not changed. Not changed at all. And apparently, according to them, the most popular secondary, which surprised me a lot. It
blows my mind. I just sat there and go, what? how long did we complain about First Blood? And how bad it was as the tiebreaker. And now it's like, yeah, you have a choice to choose whatever. I'll stick with it.
Yeah, first strike only works in the first battle round. Last strike only works in the last. But if that's what people voted, that's what people voted.
Interesting, no asterisks there.
It's also...
So you can get slow.
Let's be honest. These four points are the only way you're going to get those 4 points. So to get all 4 points in old school, you have to be working pretty hard. You have to have first strike. You have to be the first one to destroy, or you have to have a unit destroyed in the first round. Last strike, you have to have a unit destroyed in the last round. That's not always the easiest thing to do to get both those points.
No, but I look at the other two. Slay the Warlord, it does stack with Kingslayer. And Linebreaker does stack with behind enemy lines.
But again, Linebreaker is end of the game.
True. So again, like I said, whittle down the back line and hide a unit in a far corner somewhere. And if I can do that for a couple turns, I can theoretically get a fifth point for doing the same thing in four turns.
Yeah. In fact, if ground control wasn't getting 1 point for each objective held, I would almost have expected them to put ground control in with old school.
Actually, when you think about it, you can do ground control with recon and old school because of the fixed objective markers. There's going to be an objective in each quadrant. You're going to have at least one in the deployment zone. So yeah, you could rack up 4, 5, 6 on the six secondaries on the last turn alone. Whew.
Those of you who like playing straight out of the book, that's probably going to be your plan. Make those secondaries, and then it's going to be almost just like a book mission.
I find that interesting. I may have
to... one final note. It's worth noting, but only noting quickly, gangbusters. No more.
Yeah, completely eliminated. They admitted it. I think it was probably they've addressed some of the other issues already. So, which was okay, because I kept thinking we were playing some Al Capone game every time I took that objective. But so interesting. Yeah, as we kind of touched on a couple of things in there in terms of list design. So yeah, the 9-man and 17-man units are not necessary anymore. So I'd be curious to see if people will fill out their units to the full 20, like they're or 30, depending on what unit they're taking. I have to rethink which vehicles have 7 wounds. I know you mentioned the Talos and the Carnifex and the Dreadnoughts. I kind of went, oh, okay, that could be an issue. So see how that kind of plays out.
I think most transports are going to be in that list now with that. Because I think only the Venom and maybe the Harlequin's version of the Venom. I can't remember what it's called. Starweaver, maybe?
Starweaver, yes. Okay.
Those might be the only ones that don't have that many wounds. But it's something that we'll have to really look into.
Yeah,
I think there will be very few vehicles that won't make the cut for that, though.
The one thing where I could see a couple people going back to, we mentioned the days of 19-man units going away, is people being more cognizant of the PL level. But most of those are, you have a base level of this, and as soon as you go one above the, like if you have a 5-man unit, as soon as you add that 6th person, then the PL just jumps right up there. So whether you add one model or 4 additional models, the power level goes up the same. Hang on. Night Scythe is 8. Ghost Ark is 8. Just happened to be the Necron Codex. You're right about the Annihilation Barge. It's 8 wounds. So now that's a... Here we go. So we'll look at Destroyers. We were talking about them earlier. They're power level 3. And then you may include up to 5 Destroyers at 3 per model. So if you take a 2-man... Destroyer unit, you're at power level 6. As soon as you get to the 3rd, then all of a sudden you become a target. So are we going to see a lot of pairs? I don't think so. I think it'd be silly because destroyers really benefit from that stratagem that allows them to reroll to hit two wounds, and you can only play that once per phase, so why would you waste it only on 2 destroyers when you can do a large unit and really mow something down?
Yeah, I think the smart player is still going to just go with squads of 3 and not worry about it.
Right.
Anyone using destroyers knows that if you've got a decent squad, they're not going away anytime soon.
Very, very true. So, as I mentioned, there's quite a few other units that are kind of right below that power level 7. Be curious to see if they get adjusted later on. But like I said, I want to get a couple games under my belt before I say, absolutely, this needs to be changed. But yeah, Contemptor Dreadnoughts, power level 8. Venerable Dreadnoughts, level 8. Ironclads, level 8. Stern Guards are 7. Veteran Vanguards are 7. But then you get to where some of the Primaris guys. Aggressor Squad is 6. And that's with a unit of 3. As soon as you add it, then the next one beyond that, then it goes over 6. So that one kind of slips by. I was going to say a Reaver Squad, but I don't know anybody who takes a Reaver Squad right now. But... Oh, here's one. Scout Squads from Space Marines, power level 6. Whereas a Tactical Squad or an Assessor Squad is 5, but as soon as you add an additional model to that unit, they shoot up to power level 10. And I guess if you Combat Squad them, do they go back down to PL5? Yeah, I would assume so. All right. Anyway, more of that to come in future episodes as we monitor the meta for you. After the break, we give you your ITC top 10 as well as upcoming ITC events. Welcome back after the break. Here's a quick look at your ITC top 10. Last week, we had a ton of movement. This week, pretty stagnant in the top 10. So rounding out your top 10 is Daniel Olivas in 10th place, Mitch Pelham in 9th, Stephen Pampree remains in 8th place. Three of those gentlemen are only 7 points apart from one another. Huge gap then, a 16-point lead for Trent Northington in 7th place. Don Husen, our call host, has got a 3-point lead over Trent in 6th place. Nick Gower holds a 1-point lead over Don for 5th place. Jeff in Control Robinson, 2 points ahead of Nick for 4th place. Joshua Death has a commanding lead, almost 16 points over Jeff for 3rd place. Nick Donavati has a 5-point lead over Josh Death for 2nd place. And in 1st place, who has been there pretty much most of the year, Matt Rutt still holds on to that top spot with almost a 51-point lead over Nick Donavati. So plenty of tournaments coming up next weekend. Ray, what do we have?
All right, we got Wargames Con, the 40K Texas Championship GT. That's at the Doubletree by Hilton Hotel in Austin, Texas. The Stay in Your Lane GT in Antioch, California. It's kind of funny. We've got the Hive Mind Crumbles GT at Imperial Outpost Games in Glendale, Arizona.
I've heard of that one.
The Tri-State Open Charity GT at the Bearded Dragon Games in Bernardsville, New Jersey. And then the Front Range GT at Westminster Hobbytown in Westminster, Colorado.
So, as always, we'll have full results from those particular events. We'll have that next week. Don should be back next week as well. And as with all these tournaments, we'll take a look at the new effects of these missions. Until then, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.